Years since we've had Ron Chapman here. COVID got in the way, but we always love having him here. Ron's got a very, an incredible background. He is a master speaker, coach, facilitator. He's got clients all over the world, including the CDC. You got to live up to this one, Ron. He's one of the 81 top Toastmaster accredited speakers in the world. Maybe that's one of the reasons we bring him back, but also because he's delved so deeply into dedicating himself to recovery, forgiveness. As a matter of fact, he formed the Seeing True and Progressive Recovery Network. His newest book is Progressive Recovery Through the 12 Steps, An Emotionally Sober for Life. And his upcoming book is The Dark Side of Grace. You don't want to miss his 1 p.m. Seminar gathering today, which is Discovering Your Infinite Supply. Please welcome to the stage Ron Chapman.
I'm deeply moved and echoing to be here. We got me? Okay. All right. All the way out into Zoom land. I'm actually deeply moved. I was sitting here thinking about it, and some of the welcoming greetings from a lot of you are just, I told Reverend Paul a long time ago that I don't really have many places I feel like I fit, and this is one of those very few, and so there are reasons for that, some of which you're going to hear, but officially this is manna from heaven. We might call it Let's Talk About a Limited Supply, but its subtitle is What I Did During the Pandemic. Kind of like a summer report, right? So I had this plan. Now, you all are supposed to laugh because we all know we have plans and then something happens. Well, I had a plan. I was going on spiritual pilgrimage to Iona, Scotland for 2 weeks. And I was going with a collection of mystics and Jungian philosophers, and it was quite an interesting crew. And somebody decided in the presence of COVID that taking 50 or 60 people on buses to an island that had no medical facilities in the middle of COVID was probably a really bad idea. And I didn't disagree, so I said, okay, we're not going to do that. And then out of the blue, I thought, I think I need to do an inner pilgrimage. I heard that. Yeah. And what was going to be a 2-week inner pilgrimage ended up being approximately 610 days. And I was telling Christopher, you can hear the break in my voice, it proved to be the most fruitful spiritual time of my entire life in the COVID. COVID is holy ground. Come around to that. When I told Reverend Paula that I was honored to be asked again to come to this home away from home of mine, my longtime mentor and sponsor in recovery said, yeah, Ron, you're a guy, the world is your home, and you got a bed in Atlanta, Georgia. And I was like, well, that explains my world. But I said, well, good, Reverend Paula, because now I'm going to get a chance for the very first time to tell you what happened to me during the pandemic. So I'm sitting there planning to study Carl Jung, the great psychologist. And one morning, I don't remember which morning, I could go back, I kept a journal of all of this because someday I'll figure out something to do with this. So one morning, all of a sudden, I'm sitting there in the stillness, which is my favorite place in the world these days, stillness, which, by the way, isn't about meditation. It's about an inner state that goes with us everywhere if we can nurture it enough. So I'm sitting in the stillness, I've been reading this, and then I get gobsmacked, which I love that word, gobsmacked, right? Bam! And what shows up is this, oh my God. When Jung spoke of the collective unconscious that is available to us all, it was the same thing Jesus meant when he said, the kingdom of heaven is within you, which is the same thing that the epigeneticists are discovering, that literally the history of creation is in our genes. That's going to get some scientists pushing back on me. They go, oh, no, we're not there yet. But that's okay. I hang out with those people too. It's the same thing that Abraham Maslow talked about when he said, from a humanist point of view, that we are boundless, self with a capital S. And I thought, oh my God, Christian and I were talking about this. All the wise ones, the wise mystics, they're all telling the same story. They're all telling the same story. But we have a hard time hearing that. So I thought, okay, that's good. I got my pilgrimage goodies. And then it's like, no, you got more work to do. So I stayed in the pilgrimage. And sometime later, probably a week or so, I was sitting there drinking coffee, which is a meditation form for me. And what fell upon me was an awareness that the Lord's Prayer, which Richard just cited, is actually an affirmation. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Here it is, on earth as it is in heaven. That is not a prayer for the world to be altered. It is a prayer for our experience and sight to be altered so that we can see that this is already heaven on earth and always has been and always will be. Amen. Yeah. And I go, oh. I was gobsmacked again. Literally, it stopped me. It's like, oh my God, everybody around the world is praying this prayer to change the world, when in fact it's an affirmation, an affirmative prayer that says, no, reveal to me the nature of heaven on earth. It is already here, already now, already present. Nothing need be altered for me to experience heaven on earth, because it's an experience. There's a renegade Buddhist guy who says enlightenment doesn't come through thought or words or action. It comes through beingness, through experience. So heaven on earth is experience, not, it doesn't change this stuff, it transforms it. Which I'll say a little bit about what Jung said about that. So I'm like, all right, I'm all in. I don't know this is going to go 610 days, but I am all in on the pilgrimage now, because this is clearly where I need to be. Because what that would mean is that everything your heart, your soul desires is the last place you want to go for it. It's not in a relationship. It's not in a nicer car. Not actually in the right community. Oh, this is a great place to practice it. It's in there. All of it. The entirety of heaven exists in us. It is our beingness. And yet we've fallen asleep, right? We go around, this is what happens to us, we go around and we look for evidence that in fact we're living in a fallen world. We've been taught that. We look for it. I was just, and when I got into the airport, I happened to be sitting next to someone having a cup of coffee, another meditation, talking meditation, and he started explaining to me all the crime in this area. And all the while that he's talking about crime, I'm affirming in myself that it is not so. That it is not so. That it is not so. At the end, I said, thank you very much. I really appreciate your care and concern. And I moved on. So we're cycling for that. We're convinced that we're living in a fallen world. We're convinced that it's filled with bad and evil. And God knows our social media feeds reaffirm that over and over and over again. Despite the fact that if you do the research, you find out that 99.8% of 8 billion people have no ill will towards any of us all the time. They're just trying to keep a roof over their head, feed their families, take care of their lives. They're living their lives as best they're able. But we have the experience. We just don't know we have the experience. And I feel like I need to translate this for you. I thought, what would be an appropriate example here? And I thought, well, I think a really cool one for some of you would be to talk about what happens to you when you're out on the beach minding your own business and suddenly you see dolphins breaking waves. Because I know what happens, because it happens to me too. It's like, I'm transported to the moment. Everything falls away. Heaven on earth is revealed as dolphins surfacing in the waves. And it may last for long moments, right? And then we're going to look down, we're going to look at the beach and go, God, there's some trash there. There we go again. We have that. If you've ever seen a child born coming out of their mother's body, the best word to describe it is a kind of awe that descends upon us that apparently sticks for a while, and then we forget because the baby cries and off we go. Or standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon or in the sequoias or in Acadia National, pick a spot, right? I had the experience flying, because I pay a lot of attention to this now. When I was flying in, there was a moment when the sun lit Chesapeake Bay as we were looping in. I mean, there's the feeling. The feeling for me shows up right here. I used to think it was joy. It's oneness. And it brings tears to my eyes, just like it just did. It's like, oh my God. Oh my God. There it is. How could I ever forget this? And then a good friend of mine says, well, you know, Jesus even forgot when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, so maybe forgetting is part of the gig. Oh, of course, me too. Here's the interesting part. I was thinking about how to really translate this, because we're still prone to looking for bad in the world. And I remember a moment a couple years ago when I got rear-ended, a pretty bad crash. Actually, I was driving a car that was really well protected, so I came out unscathed. But as best I can recall, for about 7 minutes, in the middle of carnage, because it literally blew the back end of my car apart, cars careening out of control, and I am there, and I am one with the universe. I'm not traumatized. I don't know what I am, but I am utterly, totally in the present moment. The power of now, Eckhart Tolle would call it. And there is no wrong in the world despite the mayhem I'm setting right in the middle of. I am captivated by this moment. And it reminds me of the moment when I was watching the World Trade Centers come down. And there were, and still happens when I go back and watch those reels, it is absolutely captivatingly presencing, centering in this moment, nothing else in the world to think about. Until the translator kicks in and says, yeah, but they killed 3,000 people and collapsed two big buildings and some other ones, and the story starts up. The reason that's so important, because if the renegade Buddhists are right, that enlightenment, we might call it, is an experience, then it's the moment with the dolphins and the moment in the middle of the crash, which is the revelation of heaven on earth, which I constantly forget about. And slide back into the world. You know the experience, you just don't know that you know the experience. You just don't know that those are revealing heaven on earth. So you say, well, what are we going to do with that? Well, I'm going to tell you a funny story. When I lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico, a number of years ago, I had to take a bus one day, and I had to walk into downtown Albuquerque. And I'm trucking along with my backpack. I do a lot of urban trekking, so I'm just rocking down this asphalt road with two concrete sidewalks, lined by concrete block walls covered in brown stucco, right? Very typical southwestern scene. The day before, I'd been out in the Sandia Mountains, and I'd found a grotto that I don't know if anybody had ever found, and it literally was holy ground, right? I had that moment. It's like, oh, here it is. Well, I'm walking down Lead Avenue, which is right through the middle of downtown Albuquerque, and suddenly the asphalt, the sidewalks, and the walls light up with the same aura that I had seen in the grotto in the mountains. And I said to myself, it stopped me in my tracks. I stopped, and I go, oh my God, even the asphalt is holy ground. I heard this in the song this morning. Even the asphalt is holy ground. It lit up from within with an ethereal light. Oh my God, so when they said to Moses, when the voice said to Moses, the ground upon which you stand is holy, that was an affirmation, and it's always true. The ground upon which you stand and or sit right now is holy ground. I can't remember who said this. There's nothing but holy ground. What's missing is our ability to tune into it. Human conditioning, limiting beliefs, we might like to call it. And so you say, well, what do you do with that? Because the really wise ones say it's not like you can go around and boink yourself on the head with the magic wand and be struck into awareness. Most of us have to do the dirty work. The dirty work is where we have to look at the stuff that collapses us. You know what I'm talking about. It's easy to conjure it up here. Imagine potential nuclear catastrophe in Ukraine. That'll flatten you. So, like, how can that be holy ground? That's the work. Think of your favorite politician you love to hate. I know you all are above hate, except I also know that your politicians you love to hate, because you get that too. It doesn't fit with the framework, but by golly, that's what we do. Because we drop on our newsreels, and that stuff floods in, and we go like, "Arr! Arr!" I won't say I hate them, but that's really what it is, which is why, of course, Jesus did say something about it profiteth us nothing to pray for our friends. Ouch. I was talking to someone yesterday who will get a good chuckle out of this, who had an encounter in a retail store where she had an experience and she had to work really hard to not collapse into judgment, criticism, and condemnation. That's the work. But we think, this is called spiritual bypassing, that the work is we're going to all sit around in an ethereal glow. We're going to chant and sing beautiful songs, and we're going to all be holy. And then we're going to go out that door. We're going to turn left. And within about 10 blocks, something's going to happen, and we're going to forget our holiness pretty quickly. Usually not followed by, "God bless you for cutting me off." So this is where my recovery work, and this is where the shadow work Jung talked so much about. This is where we must go if we are to experience heaven on earth. We have to go look at the ugly, the dirty, the challenging, the difficult, the incomprehensible. And what Jung said, in order to get a transcendent result, it looks like this. You have to sit in the tension, and you have to be with the discomfort and the disquiet and the nonsensical that you're trying to make sense of. And you have to wrestle with the angel of the Lord right there, beside whatever river you're setting beside. That's a great story from the Old Testament. Wrestling with the angel of the Lord, Jacob, he eventually gets smoked, which means disjointed. Think about that. I'm just wrestling with the angel and you disjointed me? And then God blessed him and renamed him Israel and founded a great nation upon him. Which is not about the nation of Israel, it's about our human experience. We got to do the wrestling, we got to do the shadow work, we have to sit with that tension, that difficulty, and the more difficult it is, the better the fruit are born, which is what I ended up doing for 500 and some odd days, is dredging up every nasty, ugly, unfinished piece of business in me and my world, and wrestling with it. And it's not fun, it's not pleasant, but I have evidence that bypassing doesn't work. I have a lot of evidence bypassing doesn't work. It's comforting, but it doesn't work. It's very ego gratifying because I get to sound all holy, but it doesn't work. We're either going to go into the dark side to let the light in, or the light won't find its way in because we can't allow it because we're buttoned down, and at worst we project it. As Father Richard Rohr always talks about, that which we do not heal within ourselves, we will project upon someone without us. That's just what we're going to do. Which is like a real downer, right? You're going like, I came here to be uplifted. Now he's going to go dark side stuff. Well, yeah, but here's the part. I do trauma breath work with people. It's like, that's just what happened. I had a traumatic response to my own words. Take a breath. What happens when the light gets in is the dark vanishes. Jung called it the transcendent function. We're in this tension, and if we sit with it long enough and work with it long enough, the same thing the philosopher Ken Wilber discovered is you're blessed with a transcendent function that looks like this. I was playing this with yesterday. It's like, you know, it's almost like namaste going upward. And it can't happen unless we do that dark, ugly, dirty work, which means we have to admit that we have that happening in us, and then we have to do that work. And a lot of it has to be done in stillness. I had an experience of this years ago that I didn't understand the context of. I was on retreat in the mountains in New Mexico, and I got gobsmacked. And for about 40 minutes, I was just still as could be. I could hear people talking, but I was not present. And I heard the teacher say, somebody asked the teacher, "Is Ron okay? He doesn't look well." And the teacher said, "Oh, he's being worked with." he's being worked with, and he doesn't look well. Those were both true. And when I came out of it and I opened my eyes, all was well in the world. Something had been made right in me in the stillness. For those of you who studied Joel Goldsmith, that was the height of his healing practice. He'd get an envelope from someone in Australia. He was in the U.S., and he'd turn it upside down before he could even see what was on the front of it. He wouldn't open it. He wouldn't read the letter, and he would go into the stillness, and he would sit in the stillness until what he called the click came, and he knew that the healing work had been done, though he did not even know the person, didn't know where they lived, didn't know the nature of the malady. He didn't try to do anything with it. He let spirit flow. The more the darkness gets cleaned up, and I think that's what you were telling me, Christopher. Christopher was saying I seemed more present. I think what's happened is that this 610 days of stuff has cleaned some stuff out of me. I think there's a clearer channel now for things to happen. And Boyd was complimenting me on something. I said, yeah, but I've been taught to remember it's not me, it's something pours through me. To claim it is to flatten it. Me and my ego want credit. I'd ask you to raise your hands, but it would embarrass all of you. It is the Father's good pleasure to give us the kingdom of heaven. It is not withheld. It is not unavailable. It's not someplace else. It is ever present, always, right here, right now, in this moment, in this day, in this year, amidst all this stuff. And our path is to the stillness in which the transcendence can arise. So I'll tell you one funny story, and then we'll meditate. I love to think about how this might have showed up in Jesus' practice. And I love to think about, you know, the stoning of the harlot. You know, you got one side of the group clamoring to stone her and kill her because she's broken the covenants and all that. And others are like, no, forgive her, forgive her, forgive her. Right? So you hear the tension? Now, what does the master say? Let he who is without sin cast the first stone. That's this. And at that moment, I imagine both sides going, well, wait, Rabbi, what kind of an answer is that? What kind of an answer is that? So if you'll close your eyes, we have to believe Jesus had a sense of humor. He's going like, yeah, dude, I snuck that one in on you, didn't I? So close your eyes. Let's meditate for a few moments. I'm going to just gently offer a couple of thoughts. As affirmations. Thank you. That heaven is here and now in this day, this moment, this life. Thank you that the day itself is manna. If you can, see if you can find that elevating place in stillness where everything drops away. is already present. We need do nothing. And a deep breath brings you back. Feel your feet.
Expression of your